dinner, she said. I always carry rations, just in case.
Fett settled into his seat and fired up the ship's drives. He laid in a course to Vohai. His stomach rumbled. Maybe he should have grabbed some of Baveen's coin crabs after all. Fett dozed, reclining in his seat. When he slept, it was never deeply. The navigation sensors woke him with an insistent pulsing tone to warn him Slave One had dropped out of hyperspace, and he snapped upright and alert. His joints hurt. He ignored the pain. In the viewscreen, Vohai grew larger until it was the entire sky. Fett punched up the local data on his console and began his descent. Fett disguised Slave One's armaments with a sensor screen and prepared to land. If anything went wrong, he had the firepower of a small warship to get out of trouble. Turbo lasers, ion cannon, torpedoes, and concussion missiles. He added conventional armor-piercing detonite ordnance on the last refit, just in case he was ever low on power and stuck in a tight corner. Leaving things to chance was for amateurs.
Fett!
He glanced up at the screen that gave him a complete view of the cargo bay. Myrta had stood up and was stretching her arms like an athlete, pulling one arm across her body, then the other.
Are you taking me with you?
No.
So you're just going to leave me locked in here while you go off?
I wouldn't let anything happen to this ship. You're safe, as long as she is.
Galactic City Public Landing Area, 337/B.
The Falcon stood in one of the hundreds of open air bays that flanked the landing strip. Just another aging vessel. Her hull made the occasional click as the metal cooled, and an ominous pool of coolant was growing under the drive housing. Han had put a pail under the leak to collect it, and now we could hear the fluid running over the rim of the container. The pipework around the drive had sheared at the welds.
Well, said Leia at last, staring into the distance, that was character-forming.
Han stood and walked back up the loading ramp. He went down to the drive bay where he could smell scorched alloy and the throat-tingling whiff of the fluid.
Stang. He was tired of all this. Was it ever going to end? A year with Leia, a normal year when nothing happened, nothing went wrong, none of the kids was in danger. Was that too much to ask?
When he came out through the main starboard hatch again, Jason was sitting on the ramp with his arm around Leia's shoulders, forehead resting against hers.
You okay, Jason? Asked Han. You look worn out.
Not as worn out as you.
Things have been a little tense around here. Thrakken's put out a contract on us. You too.
It'll be fascinating to see him try. Jason's frowns seem permanent now. But you...
Hey, I might be ancient to you, but I can take Thrakken, thanks.
My actions on Centerpoint provoked him. I feel responsible for your safety.
You leave me to worry about Thrakken, said Han. It won't be the first time. Just wait. He'll send Fett. I can handle Fett.
Leia gave a small snort of amusement.
You can brandish walking sticks at each other. He's not getting any younger either. Why would Thrakken hire him?
Because he thinks Fett will psych me out.
He thinks right then.
Han took it as making light of her fears, but Jason didn't seem amused.
Come back to my apartment, Dad. His tone was almost pleading. Just in case someone's got your apartment here under...
Jason stopped and looked around. Something had distracted him. Something Han couldn't see or hear, as usual. Then Han caught a flash of orange out of the corner of his eye and turned to see a Galactic Alliance pilot walking between laid-up vessels on the apron of the landing strip. For an illogical moment, his stomach churned, and then he focused on long brown hair pulled back in a tail, and the fact that the pilot had an astromech droid keeping pace beside her.
Jaina, in a pilot's uniform. So when did she get that out of the wardrobe?
Said Han.
She didn't tell us she was going back on active service.
No fighting, Leia said firmly.
Han was dismayed at how fast he moved from being glad to be alive to challenging his daughter's choices. He was still relieved to see her. She just reached out and squeezed his hand. Oddly formal. And then did the same to Leia. She simply nodded at Jason, which didn't bode well.
I'm not going to ask any obvious questions,
Jaina patted R2's dome,
but I thought you could use some help with repairs.
Thanks.
Han ignored Leia's warning, and the comment was out of his mouth before he could think too hard.
And why are you decked out in an orange flight suit?
Because I'm doing my job, Dad.
Did Zek get you back into this?
Jaina could become her mother in an instant. She had that same look of sad patience. Dad, I'm 31. I'm making my own decisions, and you forget what I am sometimes.
I never forget you're a Jedi, but that doesn't mean you should get dragged into the Alliance's wars against Corellia.
Dad, said Jaina softly, I meant that I'm a fighter pilot. That's what you forget. I volunteered for active duty because this is my job.
You can't seriously believe that the Alliance is right, sweetheart, said Han.
Dad, maybe I do and maybe I don't, but that's not the issue. I'm in uniform, and that means I front up and earn it regardless of my personal views. That's what service is about.
Han took it as a rebuke. It wasn't, of course, but he knew deep down that he tended to emotion in wartime rather than cool professionalism. Yes, Jaina was a fighter pilot. He owed her the respect due to a professional warrior.
I'd better get back to base, she said.
Leia stood up and Jaina gave her a hurried kiss on the cheek.
Han didn't give Jaina the chance to duck his,
but Jason hovered on the edge of the group, seeming to want to make peace with her and getting no reaction.
Wouldn't do for me to be advertising that the Solos are back. Watch your six, okay?
Take care of yourself, Jaina, said Jason.
And you.
Jaina turned and took a couple of strides before glancing back at Jason.
You don't feel right to me lately, Jason. Are you in trouble?
Jason smiled as if he was getting her to thaw a little and was relieved. Just busy, that's all.
Jason Solo's apartment, Rotunda Zone, Coruscant.
Luke knew Ben would come back here sooner or later. He paced around the lobby of the apartment building, pausing occasionally to stare through the transparasteel doors. Something had happened to Ben. Although all of Luke's force senses told him his son was alive and unharmed, but he wouldn't answer his link. And Jason had disappeared from the force. Luke picked up echoes of him sporadically and then lost him again. He looked at Mara, wondering if she was able to detect their nephew any better than he could.
Nothing, she said, and shook her head, apparently knowing exactly what was on his mind.
It wasn't that difficult. He'd agonized about little else today.
Look, it's chaos out there. Ben's smart enough to avoid trouble. Let's take it easy.
Take it easy. What had he come to when Mara was the one urging him to calm down? He wondered how much of his own anxiety was having nothing concrete to do yet in the coming war. War. He'd thought it again. Somewhere along the line in the last few days, it had changed from a threat to a certainty. Luke tried to separate it in his mind from the force dreams of the man in the hooded cloak that still plagued him. He turned back to the turbolift and watched the cascade of lights on the floor indicator panel for a while he heard Mara say,
Now let's not be hasty, honey, okay?
Ah!
Oh no.
Luke spun around to see Ben. The boy's eyes were swollen and streaming, and he wiped his nose as if he'd been sobbing his heart out. Mara stood frozen for a second, and then went to wrap him in her arms.
What happened, sweetheart? Tell me what's wrong.
Ben coughed hard.
I got a whiff of riot gas. Oh, no.
Mara put her fingertips under his chin and turned his face to one side to examine him.
Can you breathe okay?
It's wearing off, Mom.
He submitted to a hug.
I was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Let's get you to the med center for a checkup, said Luke quietly.
I said I'm fine, Dad. It wears off.
Ben sounded annoyed.
Aren't you doing something about the water situation?
Mara intervened.
The city authorities are looking after that. Why don't we go up to the apartment and get you cleaned up?
Mara steered Ben toward the turbolift.
Where's Jason?
Ben stopped at the lift doors.
I don't know. I was coming back from Fleet Comm Sen.
They rode the turbolift in an uncomfortable silence, punctuated only by Ben's sniffs and coughs. His robe was dirty, as if he'd been rolling on the ground. When they got to the apartment, his first reaction was to head to the refresher. He stopped, a few paces back from the doors, and turned on his heel.
Bottled water in the conservator?
He said. The water supply to most of the center of the city was still cut off.
Luke turned on the taps in the kitchen to drain off any water still standing in the pipes and header tanks. There was no point taking any chances.
I can feel that you're angry, Dad, said Ben hoarsely. But it's not Jason's fault. It's mine. I decided not to go with him when he had his meeting.
He seemed about to expand on that, but checked himself visibly.
I've learned my lesson.
It's okay. Mara caught Luke's eyes as Ben covered his face with the washcloth for a moment. Her expression said it all. Is this the rebellious son we know?
Let me get you something to drink. You sound awful.
They ended up in the living room, the three of them sitting as far apart from one another as the room would allow. Ben sipped a glass of juice and occasionally broke into a hacking, uncontrollable cough that left him wheezing with tears streaming down his face. His sobriety stunned Luke. But they could sit in silence for a while. They didn't have to talk. Almost out of habit, Luke let himself drift to pick up impressions from the apartment and felt nothing beyond a sense of unease, as if Jason was having problems. A man having a difficult love affair, Luke thought. Maybe that's all it is. The doors opened, and Jason walked in, with Han and Leia. It should have been a family reunion of sorts, and a relieved one at that. But the expression on Han's face said otherwise. Luke decided to take the lead.
It's okay, Jason, he said.
We made Ben let us in. He got caught up in the rioting, dispersal gas.
I'm fine, Ben sighed. It's wearing off.
Well, we've all had a little drama in our day then. Jason ushered Leia and Han into the room. He radiated only concern and sympathy, nothing dark at all. Mom and Dad nearly crash-landed, and Dad was nearly assassinated. Mar got up to plump cushions around Leia.
Sounds like a regular day in this family.
We'll be heading back home as soon as we can find a replacement ship.
Han barely made eye contact with Luke.
The Falcon's not so hot right now. R2's carrying out repairs.
Why didn't you let me know?
Han shrugged.
We were kind of busy, trying not to plummet in flames.
Luke tasted a chance to broker some peace, at least within his own family.
Corellia doesn't have to be home, Han. Come back. You're safer here anyway.
Yeah, but there's the small matter of my being Corellian, which isn't fashionable right now. And your buddy's attacking my homeworld because it won't roll over and be the Alliance's stooge while it plays at being the Empire again.
Han, how long have we known each other?
Long enough for you to know that the way the Alliance is behaving should give you that proverbial bad feeling. The kind I get.
Han,
Leia said. It was a quiet warning. Knock it off.
No, let him have his say.
Luke was suddenly conscious of Ben watching him, and that this wasn't the way he wanted his son to see him, starting a verbal brawl with his best friend, when all everyone needed right then was to be glad they were still alive.
I happen to think you're playing Thrakken Sal Solo's game with this Corellian knee-jerk response to any suggestion of being team players.
Whoa there, kid. Whose team?
Yours? You can take this independence thing too far.
Yeah? And you were quick enough to use my sense of rugged individuality when it suited you in the past, pal. But I can't pick it up and put it down that easy. It's who I am.
Let's not argue over this, said Luke.
We just did.
Han shook his head. He stood staring at Luke for a few moments, looking more bewildered than angry.
They use you every time. Show me a government that hasn't used Jedi to legitimize its actions. You're like some galactic rubber stamp.
Why are you backing Omis?
You of all people. Does the name Palpatine ring a bell?
That was different. He was Sith.
And Omis is a jerk. Or at least a puppet for a whole mess of other jerks. Well, count me out. You've got my kids working for you, and that'll have to be enough.
Oh, boy, said Mara.
But Luke could sense her embarrassment and fear.
I love to see the grown-ups in action. Jason, let's make some calf for Leia while these two spray testosterone around the room. Come on, Ben, you too. Yeah, I've had enough of this as well, said Leia.
She got up and stood between the two men, all weary annoyance.
Cut it out, Han. And you, Luke, we've got enough problems without having a civil war inside this family.
Luke sighed and held out his hand, genuinely wishing he hadn't said a word. Han didn't take it.
I'm going to see a man about a ship, he said.
and stalked out. Jason walked up behind Luke and patted his shoulder. "I'm sorry, Uncle Luke. If I had known you were here, I'd have called ahead to say they were coming. Dad's pretty strung out right now. And it's not just the politics. It's Jaina and Thraken, and now the Falcon." As Jason turned away from him, Luke caught a very faint touch of something familiar in his mind, almost like a trace of familiar perfume. It was an echo. It felt ancient. Luke almost opened his mouth to inhale it. Then he realized what it was. He knew who it was. For a moment, he thought it was emanating from Jason. And then he realized it was purely coincidence. The revelation hit him like a body blow. He understood his forced dream perfectly now. "I know who the Hooded Man is. I know now. And it's not a man at all." Luke sensed the barely perceptible trace in the Force of a woman who had once loved him. The dark Jedi called Shira Bree, who had degenerated into Lumaya. A Sith who was more cyborg than human. A woman who hated him too, but whom he thought had vanished forever. She was back. She's here. I know she's here. Lumaya is here. Jason stared into Luke's face.
"What's wrong, Uncle?"
"Shall I warn Jason that Lumaya has come back? Will he listen to me?"
"It's nothing," said Luke. "Just unhappy memories."
Offices of Chief of State Omas, Senate Building, Coruscant.
The HNE holocam hovered patiently as Chief Omas gave an earnest interview about the safety of Galactic City's water supply. Jason stood back and watched from the sofa in the corner of the vast office.
"Extra security measures are now in place at all water company stations," said Omas. "I'm confident there won't be a repeat of the sabotage earlier this week."
"Do you believe we're facing a genuine terrorist threat, or is this a random act?"
said the reporter.
"It's a genuine threat, and it appears to be escalating."
Omas didn't hesitate.
"Even if we're not dealing with an identifiable formal terrorist organization."
"If you've identified that level of threat, then, do you feel you're doing enough to protect Coruscant citizens?"
This time, Omas did pause for breath.
"I can assure you that our security services are taking every possible action."
"But you've been criticized by some politicians for not going far enough."
"We've gone as far as the current law permits."
"Some of your colleagues are calling for the internment of resident Corellians."
"That's a very big step. We're not at war."
"By the time we are, won't it be too late?"
Omas managed a regretful smile.
"Let's not be hasty."
Jason's eye was caught by movement in the outer lobby, visible through a transparisteel panel. The outline was broken by etched designs, but he recognized Senator Gasil, chair of the Security and Intelligence Council. As soon as the HNE reporter had finished the interview and left, Gasil slipped into Omas's office.
"It's not my job on the line," he said, pulling up a chair. "But I think our friend from the media had a point."
"I'm not comfortable with taking a hardline approach," said Omas, "and it might not be my decision to make."
Gasil gestured over his shoulder to the city beyond the room-width windows.
"Take a look out there. We have a trillion people on this world. A few thousand, a tiny percentage, have been hurt directly by terrorism. The rest, though, think it's about to happen to them. And that's what we're dealing with here. Perception. Public confidence."
Omas raised one eyebrow.
"Spin?"
"Reassurance."
Jason had seen enough to add Gasil to his list of allies along with Niathal. "Fear breeds its own problems," said Jason. "We have to limit that." There was a moment's silence. Omas's shoulders dropped, and his presence in the Force was like a small piece of ice melting into nothing. His reluctance was tangible.
"Mara Skywalker isn't willing to take on a security role," he said. "You, however, seem equally able and a great deal more willing to do a thankless task."
"Define the task," said Jason.
"Fill the gap between the army and the Coruscant security force."
"Why are you talking directly to me and bypassing the Jedi Council?" Jason asked. "I'm not even in the military."
Because we're not asking you as a Jedi, said Cassil. We're asking you as Jason Solo, and you'll be given a commission and a rank, as Colonel. I'd bet the Council doesn't want to be tainted by messy stuff like this.
They won't like it.
Let's cut the PR speak. As a democracy, we've never been very adept at running secret police. You know, the kind of shock troops that Vader had when...
Cassil trailed off.
Sorry, Jason. No offense.
It's all right. Jason meant it. I'm not ashamed of Anakin Skywalker, and there are positive things I can learn from his example. The office was suddenly and totally silent, as if both Cassil and Omis were holding their breath until Jason said it was okay to exhale.
Do we take that as a yes?
Cassil asked. Jason swallowed. I'll need a security force to deal with it. Omis looked to Cassil, and then back at Jason.
CSF's anti-terrorist unit is yours to command.
No. I need my own team from the military and a few other sources. A team that's visibly separate from the CSF. If civilian police are seen raiding homes and rounding up residents, it's going to make ordinary policing hard. Politically, it has to be separate. A Galactic Alliance special guard, if you like. Cassil nodded.
I agree. You have to keep the secret police separate from the nice, polite officers who police the street. Send a message that ordinary law-abiding Coruscanti have nothing to fear, while demonstrating maximum force to the enemy.
Omis was sitting on the edge of his seat, elbows braced on the desk, one fist clasping the other as he stared down in defocus.
You said rounding up.
Internment, said Cassil. And that's not just spin. Corellians got at the water supply pretty easily. One relatively small bomb shut 10 sky lanes for half a day. It takes very few people to cause a lot of disruption on a crowded planet like this. And let me remind you that this is also a nervous planet, not long recovered from another war. Makes folks paranoid.
I'd like to recruit Captain Shivu and a team of his choosing, Jason said. I'd also like a company of Special Forces troops, and I need access to Alliance intelligence data.
You'll want NRI officers, then?
No. This has to be seen as a fresh approach to the problem. Omis radiated unease.
We've taken a step toward martial law.
Cassil interrupted.
But this is technically a Coruscanti matter. It's not a Senate issue. You have the powers to put a temporary order in place for the planet.
But Coruscant isn't just a planet. It's the Galactic Alliance, too. So I want full support for this, or things will fall apart when we start applying those special measures, as you like to call them. People tend to lose their nerve when they see force applied.
A majority of the SIC would be legitimate authority to implement special measures.
And you can deliver that majority, can you?
Said Omis. I'll call a special meeting now. Give me 24 hours.
Cassil patted Jason on the shoulder with evident relief and left. Omis, sitting behind his desk with the air of a man in a heavily defended trench, watched Jason as if expecting him to break bad news. May I start assembling the personnel I need now? Jason asked. Then we'll be ready to move when the authority is given.
Very well. Let me speak to Admiral Pellion.
Omis opened the comlink set into his desk. It was the same pleak wood and lapis as the desk itself.
And I'll get Shivu seconded to you.
You can explain all this to the Supreme Commander and CSF?
I'm very good at being plausible, said Omis. But I doubt if CSF is going to object.
Senate Lobby 513, Senate Building, Coruscant, 0835 hours.
Admiral Pellion resigned as Supreme Commander of the Galactic Alliance Defense Force at 800. A little too late for the main morning holonews bulletins, but early enough to interrupt drive-time programming for a few moments. He had objected strenuously in private to the powers granted to the Galactic Alliance Guard, but said nothing publicly. He was an old man. Nobody outside Omis's cabinet, and presumably the military, thought it unusual that he should let a younger officer take his place. Jason watched the news on the chamber's holoscreen sound muted. While he wasn't surprised that Pellion had finally gone, he still wasn't prepared for the speed at which events were moving. He wondered if Lumaya had influenced matters somehow. But she denied it. She sat beside him in the deserted lobby chamber, document case on her lap, face invisible under the dark red cowl and veil. The chamber was normally full of lobbyists and media seeking audience with senators, but it was too early for the majority of the power brokers to be about their business.
"Tell me you didn't influence Admiral Pellion," said Jason quietly.
"I didn't need to. He's furious about your appointment, and he's old."
Lumaya's voice was so low that Jason almost had to amplify it with a force in his mind.
"By the time he decides he wants to return, it will be too late for him to stop you."
The resignation of an elderly chief of defense was no shocking news story for HNE, merely a chance to recap on Pellion's distinguished career. But the succession of Admiral Nyathol was significant. She was known as a hardliner. Jason switched the wall-mounted holoscreen to a Corellia news station where her appointment was provoking reaction. Thrakken Sal Solo, head of state, was holding forth on the certain threat to Corellia. With the audio muted, Jason lip-read. Sal Solo announced that Centerpoint Station would be brought back online for the defense of Corellia within 3 months.
"You have an interesting selection of relatives," said Lumaya.
"All the more reason for me to do the decent thing and sort out the problems the various branches of my family appear to be visiting upon the galaxy."
"You're more like your grandfather than you think."
Lumaya knew Anakin Skywalker as her Lord Vader. He'd selected her as an intelligence agent.
"I haven't failed to notice the parallels," said Jason.
"And that makes you wary?"
"I've seen the steps he took."
"Literally, grandfather. I stood behind you and watched you kill children."
"I have to do things a little differently."
On the holoscreen, Corellian political commentators had worked themselves into a froth of outrage at Nyathol's appointment. Jason stood up. Lumaya said,
"Tell me what your next task is."
"Internment," said Jason.
"We're confining Corellians until this current wave of terror is contained. Come on, let me introduce you to the officer who will be in the Chief of State's office within the year."
Corellian Quarter, Coruscant.
Ben knew he was taking an insane risk by going back to the Corellian neighborhood, but he had to find Barrett. This time he made sure he was wearing regular clothes, not Jedi robes. He worried that he was a coward for hiding his status, but a sensible voice inside him said that there was no point in getting beaten up before he found out something useful. That was pragmatism, as Jason called it. He sauntered along the walkways, stopping to stare at things that made him curious, reminding himself that he was a 13-year-old boy and not a soldier this time. Nobody seemed to notice him. All he wanted to do was look Barrett in the face and ask a simple question. What made him see Coruscanti as the enemy? The Corellia neighborhood was quieter today, as if people were waiting for something to happen. Some of the shops were closed. Men stopped at a grocery store to pick up a bottle of Fizz-Aid and asked for directions to the Sai workshops. He drank as he walked the kilometer or so to Barrett's family business. Ben found two men who looked about his father's age leaning over a large repulsor drive with Hydra spanners in their hands. They glanced up sharply, but relaxed when they saw him. Just a kid.
"Where's Barrett?"
he asked casually. One of the men stood up.
"Barrett? Barrett! Someone here to see you."
Barrett emerged from a storeroom, wiping his hands on a rag. He stared at Ben for a few moments as if he didn't recognize him, and then didn't look pleased to see him. He walked out into the open air, and Ben followed him a little way from the workshops. There was an appetizing smell of frying and spices coming from an open doorway.
"Did you find your missing diamonds?"
Ben asked. He meant the gems made out of Corellian's ashes in the sanctuary.
"Did anyone give them back?"
"No,"
said Barrett.
"The sort of people who smash memorials don't have consciences."
It wasn't a good start. Ben plunged in.
"I saw you outside the embassy the other day."
"What were you doing there?"
"Getting a face full of gas."
"Yeah, so was I."
"When I say I saw you, I mean, I saw you with a weapon."
"Everyone carries a piece, even you."
"But why shoot at a cop?"
"You gonna turn me in?"
"I just want to know why you did it.
The officer never did anything to you. He was just trying to stop a fight.
Coruscant's against us. The Alliance is trying to kill us. We've got to defend ourselves.
But that's not people. The CSF wasn't trying to do anything to you. How can you shoot at someone who wasn't aiming at you?
You wouldn't understand.
I want to.
You wouldn't.
If you're that scared of us all, why are you still living here?
You'd like that, wouldn't you? Kick us out? Send us back?
Ben didn't know how to respond. You think you're at war with us?
We are. Maybe not properly, but we are.
How can you think that when you live here? If you really believe that, how can you even want to live here?
Ben stood staring at Barrett in complete incomprehension.
Come on, Barrett!
One of the men yelled.
You gonna be yakking there all day? Got jobs to do. Get on with it.
Barrett looked at Ben as if he was memorizing his face.
Gotta go. Thanks for not turning me in.
He walked back toward the workshop. Ben wandered away, the half-full bottle of Fizz-Aid still clutched in his hand, and wondered if he should have reported Barrett to CSF. It had never crossed his mind.
Jobby Town, Corellium Quarter, Coruscant, 0400 hours.
This neighborhood hated the planet on which it found itself. And that was not a political or military assessment of the risk, but Jason Solo's certainty of what he detected in the Force. Jason could sense the resentment, anger, and danger that was simmering in this Corellian district of Galactic City. And that was why he decided to begin his operations as the new commander of the Galactic Alliance Guard, by raiding Jobby Town. It was hard to seal off a neighborhood in a place like Coruscant. The intersections were three-dimensional and required 6 CSF Traffic Division repulsor lift ships for each Skylane junction that Jason needed to have blocked off. He stood on the platform of a military assault vessel, a matte gray gunship, not unlike its CSF counterpart, watching 2 of the CSF ships hover into position.
Are you okay, Ben?
Ben stepped forward. He hadn't said a word. He clutched his lightsaber hilt in one hand, and Jason sensed he was agitated rather than excited. He had changed irrevocably from a boy who found missions and adventure to a young man who had a healthy degree of fear in him.
I'm fine, Jason.
Comlink working? Ben fumbled with his right ear.
Do I really have to wear it?
You need to be able to hear what's going on between squads. You can't do that using the Force. Jason turned to the 5 squads of soldiers of 967 Commando in the troop bay, elite shock troopers, whose specialty was siege busting and personnel retrieval, all of them hand-picked because they were Coruscant-born and bred, and human, with no possibility of secret sympathies with other worlds. Among them were volunteers from the CSF's anti-terrorist unit, selected and vouched for by Shivu. They would be loyal. Jason had come to value loyalty very highly lately. He couldn't see their faces behind their riot visors and sealed black helmets, but they exuded no more than a sense of concentration and a little apprehension of the level that was normal for troops going into battle. On the other side of the Corellian district, Shivu stood by with more squads, ready to storm buildings to search, subdue, and arrest. Jason opened the comlink looped over his ear. Squad commanders, no discharge of weapons unless you're fired upon first. Shivu's voice cut in.
Could I suggest we update that to unless we perceive a real and immediate threat, sir? Takes account of grenades and other weapons.
A good idea, Captain. Revise that. Stand by,
said Jason. Ben's lightsaber sprang into life. The blue light illuminated the troop bay. The 967 sergeant crackled audibly as his armor systems created feedback in the assault vessel's public address system. He adjusted something on the side of his helmet. Silence descended. Around 2,000 people lived in this block of buildings, and Jason had 500 troops deployed. Not a good ratio, but it was enough to get the job done. The assault ship hovered level with the walkway, and he leapt down from the bay, followed by the 967, who spread immediately to stack either side of doorways. Above them, Jason could feel the adrenaline-fueled presence of roof teams and snipers.
Go, 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 said Jason.
The assault ship swung into the Skylanes on either side of the block, and their arrays of 200 million lumen spot lamps turned the area into instant blinding daylight. The 967 sergeant behind him relayed his voice via the assault ship.
This is Coruscant National Security. Stay where you are. I repeat, stay where you are. Officers will be entering buildings. Please cooperate. Be ready to show your identity passes.
One or two doors had already opened, and some people stood on balconies and bathrobes, hands shielding their eyes against the ferocious white spot lamps. All along the walkways, there was a chaos of yelled commands and hammering on doors. There was no open area to assemble detainees to sort the Corellians from other passport holders who happened to be on the block. So commandos were going into buildings and assessing the occupants where they stood, or taking them outside to stand against walls while their homes were swept for what had now simply become loosely termed as threats. Jason and Ben ran along the main walkway, lightsabers drawn, looking for where they might be needed.
Galactic Guard! Outside! Now!
Ahead of them, a squad of four 967 troops confronted a set of locked doors. They leapt back from the doorway, flattening themselves at either side of the entrance. Jason went to their aid.
Ordnance, sir?
Said one of them. The voice was female. She held up the sensor readout, the nose, as they called it, attached to the back of her left gauntlet. It winked red and orange.
The nose sniffed something, and the occupants aren't cooperating. Stand clear. Three inside.
On the other side of the doorway, a commando with sergeant's insignia on his breastplate held a thermal imaging scanner against the wall.
If anything in there blows, sir, this isn't going to look pretty on HNE. You stand clear.
Sergeant, I won't ask anyone to do what I won't do myself, said Jason.
Show me the image.
The sergeant, Warut, turned the imager to face Jason. It had a pistol grip like a loudhailer, one end of the body a lens, and the other side a display that showed red on black. Three human shapes moving around in an area that was probably set one room back from the frontage, judging by the range shown on the display's grid.
Ben, do you sense anything? Jason asked. What does it feel like to you?
Ben's sense of danger was becoming very acute.
Dangerous, but not right now. Soon.
Explosives, but not assembled?
Is that what you feel?
Yes, said Jason. He motioned Warut back. Hold the gas trooper. You want them immobilized?
That's the general idea, sir, so they don't detonate anything.
Fine. Jason took a breath, visualized the interior of the ground floor and the door, and focused himself on the three people inside.
Sir?
Jason didn't hear the rest. He sent a force jolt through all three targets simultaneously, paralyzing them. And a second later, the doors blew open, not with the punishing shockwave of a conventional blast, but the contained violence of the Force.
Nice trick, sir,
Warut said, ready to ease through the torn gap that had been the front doors. Jason slipped in after him, followed by Ben and the rest of the squad. The three occupants of the house, a man in his 30s and two younger women, were crumpled on the floor of a back room, unconscious. Warut crouched down and checked them for a pulse.
Are they going to be okay?
It's harmless and temporary, said Jason. Just a shock to the spinal cord.
You're going to put us out of business, sir, said the female trooper. R.E.B.J.
I wish that were true, but I suspect you're going to be busier than ever. Jason watched as one of the squad held out his left gauntlet, following some trace. He was searching for the explosives.
R.E.B.J.? Rapid entry by Jedi, sir. Very handy. You'll be in demand.
Fleet Surplus Disposal Lot, Galactic City, Coruscant.
Captain Solo, are you sure we can't accompany you back to Corellia?
C-3PO seemed reluctant to surrender the case of clothes to Han, as if hanging on to the handle would ensure that Han took him, too.
Yeah, nobody would ever notice a golden droid. You'd be invisible.
Han didn't like the smell of the small shuttle he'd bought from the government disposal lot. It was alien. He hadn't realized how much of that small detail of the Falcon was embedded in his sense of comfort.
Stay here. Besides, you and R2 can keep an eye on Jaina for us.
Han?
Leia's voice drifted from the small cargo bay.
Honey, nobody has protocol droids like him any longer. He'd be a...
Han, you need to see this.
Han made his way back aft to see her staring transfixed at the holoscreen in one of the coffin-sized cabins.
Another bomb? He asked.
Try bomb shell.
Han took a few moments to work out what he was looking at. Riot police. No, soldiers in black armor were storming buildings. And the caption said, Jobby Town, dawn raid on Corellian community. It was everything he expected from the Alliance. They were playing the Empire all over again, almost right down to the armor.
Oh, you reckon this is going to shock me?
Leia's mouth was slightly open. Her frown made her look as if she was close to tears. She held up her hand for quiet, and he saw it was shaking slightly.
Jason,
she said hoarsely. Han scanned the screen, expecting to see Jason injured or attacked, and then saw his son, his little boy who had always had a soft heart, who could feel pain for others, directing soldiers into buildings to drag out Corellians. In that way of terrible and unimaginable things, it didn't look real. His mind conjured up a scenario instantly. It was a vile piece of fake propaganda. It was Thrakken's doing. It was a lie. But it wasn't. Leia put her hand to her mouth. Jason even had his lightsaber drawn. And he had Ben with him. Ben was taking part in the raid. Han couldn't speak.
Honey, what's happening to him?
Leia's voice was a whisper.
How could he do this?
All Han could think now was that they could be on the run from their own son, and that they'd be even less welcome back in Coronet if their identities were discovered.
3PO, Han called. 3PO, when the Falcon's ready, fly her over to us any way you can. Get back to the apartment now and call Jaina. Tell her we'll talk to her later. We have to go. Got it?
I have indeed got it, Captain Solo.
Galactic Alliance Guard HQ, Quadrant A-89, Galactic City, 0830 hours.
Jason came out of the GAG briefing room to find Mara standing with her hands on her hips, as if he'd kept her waiting a little too long. She looked more under control than relaxed. Her expression was carefully neutral, but he could feel the fear in her and see the dark circles under her eyes. She stared.
When did you start wearing a uniform?
Jason glanced down at his black fatigues, hands held away from his sides. I should have changed before we carried out the raids. Jedi robes and police actions don't mix.
You're telling me. Luke's going crazy. Emergency meeting of the High Council right now, in fact.
I meant all that loose fabric is... Never mind. Mara indicated her own battle jacket.
Sorry, Jason, it's just a shock to see you in that uniform.
I'm a colonel now.
I'm not arguing, I just wanted to talk to you before Luke finds you. Is Ben okay?
He did very well. You want to see him? He's in the briefing room. We're just doing a wash-up with the squad leaders to work out what we'll do differently next time. And watching the news on the hour, of course. Mara managed not to raise an eyebrow.
There's going to be a next time, then.
You turned the job down. What did you think?
That it was going to be dirty.
It is. But churning through war after war because we don't ever fully deal with unrest is a lot dirtier. The briefing room doors slid open, and a corporal from 967 Commando, LaCalf, stuck his head out.
Sir, you're on again, he said with a grin. Sorry, ma'am. H&E news.
Don't let me interrupt you, said Mara. Just passing.
Jason took her arm.
Come in and meet my men.
She recoiled visibly at the sight of Ben in black fatigues. He was sitting at the table with Shivu and the sergeants, cup of caff in one hand and data pad in the other. And even his body language was suddenly becoming adult. He was mirroring the adult males around him without even realizing. When he stood up to greet Mara, it struck Jason that Ben would soon be as tall as he was.
Ma'am,
said Ben, all grave concentration. Not mom. Ma'am.
I didn't sense you coming. I just dropped by to say that I watched the Holo news and... I wanted to see how you were feeling, said Mara. Are you all right, son?
Apart from getting up at 0200, I'm fine.
You're getting so military, Mara managed to grin. You're sure you're okay?
Why wouldn't I be? It wasn't dangerous, like the assault on Centerpoint.
Captain Shiva was watching my six.
Jason found it touching that Ben had formed a bond with the 967. It boded well.
Here we go,
said Lakoff, and turned up the audio on the briefing room's holoscreen. The image flashed up the tagline, cracked down at the bottom of the screen, and H&E anchors went into a recap of the morning's raid on Jobby Town. 4 hours after the raids, the news emphasis had turned from the drama of hovering assault ships and commandos breaching doors to public reaction. Admiral Nyathol contributed a 30-second defense of the GAG's actions. 967 Commando was, after all, now part of her special operations forces, but it didn't appear that defense was necessary. Jason, braced for opprobrium, was taken aback by the reactions of Coruscanti asked for their opinion on the streets and walkways of Galactic City.
It's about time, said one man in a business suit. I think Colonel Solo did what we should have done a long time ago. We're too scared of upsetting other governments. Well, Corellia. Not anymore.
Mara murmured, faintly sarcastic.
Ooh, you've got fans. Didn't plan that. I know. I hope Luke sees it that way, too, said Jason, knowing that he wouldn't. And Admiral Nyathol. I'll try convincing him.
Jason still felt a flutter of hesitation around her.
I know you're still troubled by all this. Okay, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead. Mara's eyes were fixed on his now.
Is there someone in your life who's causing you some pain?
I don't understand. You really didn't.
A woman, Jason. I'm not prying. I just need to know if you're having a difficult time.
He thought of Tanel Ka and Alana. He hardly dared do that these days, in case Lumaya sensed his secret and they were put in danger. More danger than they already were in.
Yes, it was so true that it hurt. There's someone I would like to be with that I can't.
Mara exuded pure relief. The frown lines between her eyebrows vanished, and she almost smiled.
That's all I needed to know, Jason. I'm sorry you're having problems. I won't mention it again. But if I can do anything, you let me know, okay?
Jason nodded. He couldn't imagine anything that Mara could do, but it was comforting to know she was willing.
Thanks, Mara, he said.
You're probably about my only friend these days.
Der Gedgen's house, Coronet Corellia.
That Gedgen kid didn't seem quite so pleased to see Han this time.
You gonna invite us in?
Han filled his doorway, blaster held at his side, and Gedgen stared at it wide-eyed.
We're feeling kind of unwelcome out here.
Gedgen stood back, eyes still on the blaster, as Han and Leia slipped into his hallway. Han flicked on the safety.
Where have you been?
Asked Gedgen.
We ran into a well-wisher and had to make a run for it, said Leia. And before you ask, yes, we know what's happening on Coruscant.
Sal Solo is having a field day with it.
Two small children emerged behind Gedgen, and he shooed them back into the room.
The Solo son imprisoning innocent Corellians? Inspiring headlines.
Han snorted.
I'm glad I don't shock easy. Does this mean he's changed the contract on me to read extra dead?
Us, Leia muttered.
Gedgen ushered them into his front room, and Han noted that the blinds were drawn.
Where are you staying?
Han didn't sit down despite the mute offer of a chair.
That's our little secret.
Okay.
Gedgen didn't appear offended. Paranoia seemed a normal part of political life.
My sources say there's more than one taker for the contract.
Fett doesn't play well with others.
Told you it wasn't Fett, said Leia.
Fett or no Fett, Captain Solo, the threat is real. And while we're appalled at what your son appears to be doing, Thrakken Sal Solo is pursuing his line for his own ends, not Corellia's. So as far as we're concerned, we still have common cause.
Who's we?
The Democratic Alliance. We understand how hard it is for you.
You think?
You're here, aren't you? We know you put Corellia first.
I'm going to deal with Thrakken myself, thanks.
We can't be seen to do that, of course, but we can probably give you useful support.
Just keep feeding me information about Thrakken's location, said Han. Your party representatives have access to that, right?
When he's taking part in government business, yes. Itineraries, meetings, that kind of detail.
Good.
So, what's your plan?
Han gave him a slow, wary smile.
If I told you that, you wouldn't be able to deny involvement, would you?
Gedgen went to a desk in the corner of the room and took a data chip from a drawer.
Floor plans, he said. Government buildings, they're not illegal, just only available for inspection in libraries and civic offices. They might be useful.
Consider me a librarian.
Dur, said Leia, if Thrakken Sal Solo were to fall from power, would your party be in a position to form an emergency government?
Gedgen was now focused totally on Leia. That was what really interested him, the seizure of power.
Han chose not to be offended.
With my colleagues, the Corellian Liberal Front, and those in the Centerpoint Party who'd like a change of leadership, yes.
So that's how a coup happens, Han thought. In some guy's living room, while his kids are playing in another room.
Senate Chamber, Coruscant. Emergency debate on internment policy.
Jason sat next to Niathal on the Mon Calamari delegate's platform and listened to Corellia's Senator Char haranguing Chief Omis about the abuse of human rights on Coruscant and the lack of consultation with the Senate.
We have no option but to withdraw our ambassador, said Char.
Is that Coruscant or the Alliance we're talking about?
Omis asked. Char hesitated.
Isn't that one and the same, Chief of State?
I think the Honorable Representative from Corellia understands that the action I took was to ensure the safety of Coruscant citizens, which is a responsibility given to me by the Coruscanti local authority, and so does not require sanction by the Senate. So which entity do you wish to withdraw representation from?
There was a general murmur of support, but significant barracking from some of the Outer Rim delegates. Omis stood his ground.
How do you feel about that blockade, Admiral? Jason asked quietly.
Are you asking if I could mount one now?
I'm assuming you can. Do you still favor one?
Yes, because that's the most robust stance I can persuade the Senate to allow, and blockades are very flexible responses,
Niathal said. If it were carried out on behalf of the Alliance, that
is. We live in a world of blurred lines.
After the debate, Jason and Niathal joined Omis in the Chief of State's cabinet room, where Senator Gasil was already waiting. Omis didn't look happy, and sat down at the head of the lapis-inlaid table with slow deliberation.
I'm getting very uneasy about this, Admiral, said Omis. The images on the HNE might have played well to the jingoistic element on Coruscant, but it reminded a lot of us of Imperial excesses. You authorized the action.
Niathal fixed Omis with that head-tilted stare.
What did you expect it to remind you of?
Jason cut in. We're simply doing the same as terrorists, except we caused no serious casualties. A small action, creating a disproportionately large impact. This is as much a propaganda war as anything.
You plan to scare Corellians out?
Omis said. Niathal lowered her voice.
No. We plan to make it clear we will deal with threats to the population of Coruscant. And that's why you go in and do your own sleight of hand, is it?
Omis was addressing his remarks to Niathal, even though it had been Jason's operation.
One massive overreaction makes it look as if you have the whole situation under control.
If that's how you want to see it, Chief Omis, yes, Jason answered. No deaths, a reassured public, a clear statement to any who want to kill and maim civilians that they won't be tolerated, removing truly dangerous individuals from our streets. And also sending a message that if Corellia can be stopped from pursuing a destructive path at the expense of the common good, then any world can. Or would you rather let the enemies within erode our society? These are people who are happy to accept the benefits of being a Coruscant resident, an Alliance citizen, but don't want the effort of being loyal to it. If that's my sleight of hand, then I'll sleep soundly tonight. Omis looked about to speak, but simply glanced down at his hands as if making a conscious effort not to respond. He was too wily a politician to take on both Jason and Niathal in front of Gasil. If he lost, Gasil would smell blood.
If you'll excuse me, I have to talk to the Corellian Embassy.
Oma stood up and walked to the doors.
I'd appreciate a schedule of your next operations in advance.
Arcanian Microtechnologies Headquarters, Volhai.
If there was a weak point in any perimeter, Boba Fett would find it. And he had. He watched a small bird, a hummer, bright scarlet, perch on top of the 4-meter-high perimeter fence that ran for 6 kilometers around Arcanian Micro's headquarters, and noted that there was no reaction from the guards in the gatehouse. There was no point having a security system so sensitive that birds could set it off. And if a bird could get over that fence, then so could Fett. Fett adjusted the controls of his jetpack and soared over the fence. He sprinted to the cover of the wall and jetted to the flat roof. Normally he would have fired his grappling hook and climbed, but speed mattered now. It was worth the extra jetpack fuel. He lay on his belly and crept across the roof, his visor almost touching the gravelly surface as the penetrating radar scanned for people within. It was a huge area to cover. He pressed a medical sound sensor, more sensitive than the military ones, to the roof to pick up what signal he could. From the sound of the conversation immediately below him, a woman recording someone's educational details, he had landed over the personnel department, and he was still crawling across offices that had external windows. Ton Wee would be somewhere far from daylight, right at the center. It took him more than 2 hours to edge his way across what seemed to him a featureless charcoal gray cinder plain, listening for clues to what lay beneath, and watching the radar outlines of bodies moving. Fett heard the clink of glass dishes and the whoosh and oomph of chiller cabinets opening and closing. He saw people sitting, probably at a long bench, and others clustered around a table. The outlines of the inorganic objects were almost impossible to make out, but he was used to assembling a mental image from the scant cues provided by the movement and shape of bodies. He'd seen a few labs in his time. He knew how Ton Wee liked hers laid out. When she'd had a leg clone for him a few years before, her Tapaka laboratory had still been just like it was when he was a kid, and she had first shown him around. He heard the occasional word that sounded like a conversation about a scanning microscope. Could mean anything. He checked the chrono readout in his helmet, shifting his focus and feeling the beginning of a headache.
3 hours. Too slow.
And then he heard it. Just a couple of words. It was Ton Wee's fluting, gentle voice. He forgot the raw ache in his sternum and felt the adrenaline course through his body, erasing every pain.
Gotcha.
He frame-grabbed the coordinates in his HUD, got to his knees, and scouted around for an air vent. There was a biohazard containment opening 50 meters across the roof, and he knew it would yield to the lock overrides on his wristband. He hadn't met a lock seal or panel that didn't. He slid down the vent and found himself standing in a chamber with 2 doors leading off it. Both were locked. He adjusted his helmet sound sensors and listened. The corridor outside was clear. A quick flick back to the terahertz radar scan confirmed it. He made his way down the corridor, checking as he went, following the occasional sound of Ton Wee's voice, until he found himself outside an office with 2 shapes visible inside on his helmet scanner. 1 dense human body, and a Kaminoan one, with its characteristic abdominal spaces. Fett ducked into the nearest alcove, a fire control station, and waited for the human to leave. Eventually, the doors opened, and a woman left. The lock panel at the side of the doors flashed again, but Fett slid a blade from his override system into the slot, and the doors parted with a whisper. He took the precaution of locking them behind him. Leaning over the desk, a tall creature with a long, graceful neck and small, round gray head was engrossed in work at a data screen. Ton Wee didn't turn around.
Please leave the file in the tray.
Nice place you got here.
Kaminoans never showed emotion, but the speed with which Ton Wee whipped around and the way her head jerked back on seeing him told him she was surprised.
Boba.
Oddly, there's only one.
How did you find me?
It's my job, remember?
Fett lifted his helmet.
Let's say I followed the money.
Koenei sent you to...
No, He wants his data back. That's not why I'm here.
Tan Hui stared into his face, blinking slowly.
Are you all right, Boba? Is your leg functioning properly?